Hello, everybody. It's Monday, June 10th, 2024. We've got Troppo coming at you. It's me, Felix, and Amber today. Going to break it down. And I guess I'd like to begin today with some of the ongoing travails of the Joe Biden administration. Last week, we obviously dealt with the fallout from Trump's felony convictions in a New York court. So in interest of fairness, I think we do need to discuss some of the things that continue to plague the Biden administration, as well as his son's legal woes. Now, I should say this, that we're going to be discussing a Biden interview and some of the more intractable geopolitical apocalypses that he seems to be presiding over. But I do have to say that I have never felt stronger than the feeling that I do have now, that Biden somehow will win this presidential election in November. And I'm like, this is not informed on anything other than just vibes, other than just my feeling and just sort of general, like, betting on the stupidest, worst possible outcome. But I will say, and last week when the Trump convictions hit, the New York Times assembled this panel of undecided voters to give the usual, like, totally conflicted and bizarre, like, to give responses that are, like, accurate and telling about, like, how the average American voter thinks, that is nonetheless totally baffling and incomprehensible to anyone who takes, like, a comprehensive interest in politics. And there was one thing, I don't know the gentleman in question, but there's one thing the undecided voter said that really stuck with me, and I think it will damage Trump in the long term. And that was, he said, of his felony convictions, he said, yeah, I believe this was a witch hunt. I think the Democrats are out to get him. But nonetheless, if you're supposed to be a billionaire and you can't commit tax fraud and falsification of business records without the feds getting you, then you are not a competent chief executive. And then he also said, there are so many more attractive porn stars other than Stormy Daniels to have sex with you. So I think that calls into question both his judgment and his taste, because I mean, I think the biggest liability for Biden is his age. And as we've said before, the biggest liability for Trump is that he's a known quantity, and that quantity is loser. And just like, mm-hmm. even if you think the felony convictions are illegitimate in some way, it doesn't speak well of this American Caesar figure to not be able to get away with paying off a mistress to keep her mouth shut.
Yeah, Alvin Bragg, even the most unimpressive Caesar, even the Caesar of, like, Cicero, Illinois, would be able to overcome Alvin Bragg. You could overcome Alvin Bragg by gifting someone in his office Hulu Premium. Not even the kind with no ads, just less ads.
He's crossing the Ruby Tuesdays con.
Yeah, that's another thing I'm sick of. How many fucking Rubicons are there in America? I'm so sick. Anytime something like this happens, people, oh, the Rubicon's been crossed. Watch me lay down another year.
Mm. I think it speaks to the fact that Americans at this point love a scammer.
Oh, it's not for you. It's more of a Shelbyville idea.
Now, wait just a minute. We're twice as smart as the people of Shelbyville. Just tell us your idea and we'll vote for it.
But we hate it when they're bad at it. It's a different kind of loser. Like, you know, there's the suckers who get scammed, and then there's the guy who just trips over his own dick trying to screw everyone over. And, like, that guy's just more embarrassing.
Oh, this is bad. This is really bad. You work and you slave and you steal just enough for a sweet lick of that shiny brass ring. Don't I get a lick? Doesn't Gil get a lick?
You know, Amber, you're right. It's sort of like the difference between how Martha Stewart remains a beloved cultural figure and, in fact, is probably even more beloved for having done a bit in prison. And Elizabeth Holmes is just like, loser, get her out of here. She's the bad kind of scammer, the one who believed her own bullshit and is now doing a 10-year stretch.
I will never forget what my dad said, his legal analysis of the Martha Stewart case in 2002. He was like, really? They're just sending her to prison because she's a bitch, but I bet Ken Lay's a bitch too. And it was like, I was like, yeah.
It did. Like, she was largely disliked. Yeah. I mean, it's not like she did anything that they don't all do.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what he meant. And he was right. That was, you know, at the core of it. It was just that she was, like, mean. And they were like, oh, you know, this woman who's made $700 trillion off of like finished cutting boards. Oh, you made $20,000 on a stock that doesn't exist anymore. We're going to kill you.
So, yeah, I think it's not so much that Trump is a felon. I think it's just that he's an incompetent one, and the things he's getting convicted for are embarrassing petty ante crimes. You know, he's not exactly John Dillinger over here. You know, he's not like Bonnie and Clyde. But we should talk about Joe Biden's son, who is facing some legal difficulties of his own. This is why it's my advice never to get involved in a trial of any kind. If at all possible, avoid being prosecuted. Because especially if you're a person of note, all of your exes will be called to testify about what a shitty person you are. But the funny thing about the Hunter Biden trial, where he's facing, what is it, like federal gun charges because you can't own a gun or possess a gun if you're a drug addict, which seems sort of unconstitutional to me.
It's a weird one. Yeah. Like there's so many things they could have got him on. And it was just like the most white trash. It's something that, like, my stepbrother would get in trouble for. It's not supposed to be the son of the president.
It's what they get every rapper for on federal gun charges. Mm-hmm. If you have like any type of felony at all, like you do federal time, if you've, you know, bought a handgun, you remember when Lil Wayne was like in Rikers for a year? That's what they got him.
Yeah.
Charge that U.S. attorneys use for rappers. It's just like, with Hunter Biden, like, I know he's a crackhead, but it's like, aren't you a lawyer?
I don't even know what he is. I don't think I've ever looked into his education I've just completely shoved that to the back of my mind. Right now, he's just Hunter, the way like Paris Hilton was Paris. Like he's just a figure. He's just another wacky disaster.
I mean, the thing I like about this trial, though, is that the prosecution is calling like all of his ex-girlfriends and former paramours to testify. But it does seem like it seems like they're being character witnesses for Hunter Biden. I'm just going to read here from the Politico account. It says, two of Hunter Biden's exes describe his years of drug abuse. And I know the prosecution, like, they think they're nailing him to the cross with this. But it says here, Wilmington, Delaware. Hunter Biden's federal trial on gun-related charges took a personal turn on Wednesday as two of his former romantic partners, including his ex-wife, Kathleen Buell, took to this witness stand and described Biden's years of abusing crack cocaine. Both women were called by prosecutors who have charged the president's son with three felonies stemming from the purchase of a handgun on October 2018. Prosecutors say he lied about his drug addiction on a federal gun purchasing form, and then he legally possessed the gun for about 2 weeks. So going on, it says, the next witness, Zoe Kesten, a former romantic partner of Biden, she testified she met him on December 17th, 2017, when she worked at a strip club in Midtown Manhattan, and he booked her and another woman for a private dance. Biden played the music by the indie folk band Fleet Foxes on his phone, and he smoked something she assumed was crack.
That's the most...
That's embarrassing. That's not stripper music.
He's got to be the first guy in history to smoke crack to the Fleet Foxes. That's insane. Like, that is, put him in Supermax.
Yeah, this is why you don't want to get prosecuted. They're going to parade all your exes out? I would kill myself.
Well, Amber, yeah, listen to this, though. I mean, there's an embarrassing disclosure that he smokes crack while listening to Fleet Foxes, which, you know, can I recommend a little Hall & Oates, you know? Private eyes are watching you. They see your every move. But I want to say there's one quote here that right after it says, and you listen to the indie band Fleet Foxes and smoked something she assumed was crack. Then she says, quote, I felt really safe around him, she said. Fellas, this is what I got to say here. This is the way women treat you. This is the way females treat you when you're over 6 feet tall. You can literally be smoking crack in front of them all day long, and they will say shit like, I feel really safe around him. He was so alert and present at all times.
I mean,
he had something to say instantly to everything I
He was really listening really hard.
Yeah.
I like that, like, this is part of the legal process, like a humiliation ritual. I like the, like, if I ever, like, if I like committed securities fraud, I imagine that they would just bring in every girl I've ever known and they would be like, he made me watch Pink Floyd's The Wall on DVD. It took him 20 minutes to find a DVD player and it was underneath a pile of pants.
I would be.
You can't object. Even though it's not related.
He used to fall asleep in his pants and his jeans and not take his money out. So when he woke up in the morning, he would be walking around and coins would just be falling on his off of his back because they had stuck to him throughout the night, like an anti-Semitic stereotype. Just ding, 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 ding.
Objection, objection. I would ask the court to have Ms. Frost's comment stricken from the record. The jury will ignore that. By the way, speaking of stitched up trials going on right now, Felix, I know you saw that clip from the Young Thug trial that's going around.
What the fuck? That shit is insane.
What is going on there? Has anyone in Georgia
passed the fucking bar? Like, what?
Okay.
The judge of that case is like, call to order. It's illegal for the defense to, like, have secrets. There's no secrets in this courtroom.
I mean, it's amazing to me that this story isn't getting, like, it's crazy. This story is broken by, like, Young Thugger fan account. Like, YSL News. It's amazing, like, because there are cameras in this trial, and basically, Young Thug's defense, his attorney, just got hit with a contempt charge and was taken out of the court by the bailiff because he confronted the judge with information he received about an ex parte communication between the judge, the prosecutor, and a witness compelling him to testify that he wasn't present for. And the judge is like, but before we deal with any of that, I'm going to need to know who told you that. And, like, confirmed that this communication took place, but then was just like, I'm going to give you 5 minutes to tell me who told you this, and then, or else we're going to have problems.
Like, it's insane. Like, I get, like, if you're, you know, there are a billion judges that, like, they're not impartial. They're completely aligned with the prosecution. That's probably, like, most criminal courts in America, right? But, like, most of the time, they don't do it in such a slapdash fashion where they are creating the most appealable case of all time. Like, they're like, even if at this point, if this doesn't get, like, if another court doesn't intervene or this doesn't just get fucking thrown out or whatever, like, how will this not be appealed into oblivion? This is one of the, like, the most fucked up courts I have ever seen in my life. Like, was it his first day? Was the Young Thug RICO trial, like, he had never been a judge before? He just passed the bar. Was he one of those, like, county lawyers?
Jack McCoy would never let some shenanigans
it's
like this.
So
was he,
like,
wearing like a I bet he was wearing like a seersucker suit under the robe. Like, he wanted to sort of embody a kind of, like, classic, you know, thing, but he was, like, kind of resentful about, like, they wouldn't let him wear the outfit. It put him in a sour mood.
But he's a sicko, so he's completely nude from the waist down, but he's still wearing suspenders. He's still wearing suspenders, just, like, clipped to an elastic waistband and nothing else under his judicial gown.
Sock garters too.
He just likes to feel it. He likes to feel it snap. He likes to feel a snap when he issues a contempt charge.
Absolute pervert.
He's probably mad because he wanted to, like, do a good, like, old fashioned race, like a Southern racist case.
Yeah.
Where it's like someone, like, whistled at a woman or something like that. Someone stole molasses. Yeah, time to kill case. But no, he has to do the Young Thug case, the most confusing case ever. Like, this is the Young Thug case is, you know, it is a racially swapped version of the Lev Parnas affair, as far as I'm concerned. I'm so confused. There's so many Lev Parnases, Felix, in this case. I didn't know there were so many Lev Parnases in Atlanta.
I saw another amazing clip from it where one of the witnesses pleaded the fifth when asked, how old are you? And then they were like, you can answer the question, how old are you? And he just says, I'm an adult. such a good answer.
I'm a grown man.
I thought that was such a good answer. Sorry, just to return to the other miscarriage of justice in the Hunter Biden trial. Speaking of the young lady who said she felt very safe around him, She saw him again a week later, and they stayed together for 5 days at the Soho Grand Hotel. He typically smoked crack every 20 minutes, she testified, and that he was just so charming and so nice. At the time, I felt myself having feelings for him. Women are demons.
What is this women woman's are life? Demons. What guys did she date before Hunter Biden?
This is, like I said, when you're 6 feet tall or above that, you can do anything. You can do any. You can smoke crack and listen to the Fleet Foxes, and women will find themselves falling for you.
If you think about it, Hunter is the opposite of, you know, a very typical 5'9 boyfriend that many women have experienced. The guy who's
one in particular.
I don't think you do this. I've never seen you do this. I don't think you would do it. It's for a different type of guy. It's the type of guy where him and his best gal are always going to local establishments, and within an hour, he's always like trying to grab her wrist for some reason and going, "Wait!" The wait guy. And, you know, a tall, striking, crack addicted lawyer is kind of the opposite of that. He's not going to grab your wrist. He's like, just go if you want.
Yeah, he's got other things on his mind.
I've got crack to smoke.
Yeah. Go or don't, or stay here and listen to Feist while I smoke, while I freebase. listen to all the songs that they use to advertise the iPod Nano and the Shuffle 2004 with me.
Yeah, he just puts on like the Starbucks mixtape. And he's just like, actually, Regina Spektor's later work is really good.
It's like he has never listened to his song. Like he did have that like one rap song that he showed his lawyer. But beyond that, it is all exclusively shit that was used to advertise the Zune.
Yeah.
Like it is industry plant, like indie stuff. It's so it's such a distinct soundscape that he has.
It is. It's Starbucks music. It's just like you can ignore it and you can't tell them apart. And I think that is maybe it's kind of like, you know, crack keys you up. So I'm told. And like maybe he needs like kind of a white noise, and that's his version of like playing Crashing Waves or whatever, so he doesn't like jump out a window.
I think he probably had bad experiences listening to like judging
Rush.
By his age. Rush, No Effects, like harder stuff when he first started smoking crack, and he freaked out. You know, he ran through a plate glass window. He like. You know, he probably did some of the things from American Psycho, like he tried to put a kitten into an ATM. he did all that stuff. And he was like, no more early 90s pop punk or anything for me. That gets me too crazy. We are going to listen to the sounds of Dumbo, New York City, Brooklyn in 2004.
Felix, he was on hour 65 of a cocaine crack bender and was hitting up the ATM to take out another few hundred dollars. And for a brief second, the screen said, "Feed me a major."
We joke around a lot. We don't approve of when Patrick Bateman did that to the cat.
No.
In the book.
I think he's actually not a role model. I don't think he's cool at all.
Yeah.
Come on, Bryce. There are a lot more important problems in Sri Lanka to worry about.
Like what?
Well, we have to end apartheid for one, and slow down the nuclear arms race, stop terrorism, and world hunger.
Patrick, how thought-provoking.
Well, moving on from the sins of the son to the sins of the father. The other week, Joe Biden gave an interview to Time magazine, and I thought this would be good. I have a transcript of the interview here, and the only way I think we could do justice to this interview is if Felix reads the Biden parts, because this was comprehensively the most E1 Biden that we've seen in a while. So, I mean, like, just this sort of like, there are a couple big issues confronted in this interview of, like I said, the several geopolitical catastrophes that are currently unfolding on his watch. But like, let's just get a little glimpse inside the Biden White House. And the other funny thing about this interview is that like four of his aides, including John Kirby, were in the room while the interview was being given and interject at various moments. So for this interview, I will be reading the part of the Time magazine journalist, and Felix will be playing the part of Joe Biden. Now, I've given Felix instructions that these answers are kind of long, so feel free to trail off into incoherence at will, and you will basically accurately capture the nature of this conversation that Joe Biden had. So without further ado, this is a Time magazine's interview with Joe Biden. Thank you for doing this, Mr. President. We appreciate your time. Busy moment. I'll dive right in. You're traveling next week to Normandy for the 80th anniversary of D-Day to commemorate a turning point in America's leadership with the free world. But the anniversary comes at a time when the U.S. under your leadership has been unable to deter crisis. First in Afghanistan, then Ukraine, Israel, and mounting tensions in the Far East. Is America still able to play the role of world power that it played in World War II and in the Cold War?
We're planning even more. We are. We're the world power, and what I inherited as a consequence of the mistakes that we made, they all made in Afghanistan. It was not a loss in Afghanistan. Excuse my cold. We have compared to the rest of the world, we put together the strongest alliance in history. This is the world number one. Number two, we're not number two, but number two, the order of the thing. If you're black, listen to the radio. We're in a situation where we have to be able to move in a way that recognizes how much of the world has changed and still lead the world. And it's in our security. For example, the idea that when Putin decided to go to Russia, I mean, if he's going to go from Russia into Ukraine, the reason why I cleared the intelligence so we can release the information we knew that he was going to attack was to let the world know we were still in charge. We still know what's going on. I know what's going on. I'm here. You're here. Welcome to the room.
It goes
he
on
pulls out a copy of a speech that Putin delivered on the day that they declared war. It's the address to the Russian people on the Donbass problem on February 21 when Moscow was going in, and it lays out why I believe Trump, what he never understood, which is that Russia, he wasn't just going into Moscow, I mean from Russia into Ukraine, for purposes of keeping from weapons having... He believes it is an essential part of Russia from the beginning. This is holy fuck. I added some things before the but it like the last thing I read is like you really get dissociative when you read this. You're trying to read this out loud. This is fucking crazy. Number two, NATO is considerably stronger than it was when I took office. I put it together. Not only did I reestablish the fact that it was the strongest alliance in the history of the world, I was able to expand it. Well, I was in the G7 meeting in Europe. When I got back, I called the president of Finland, Tom Finland, big, strong man type of guy, you know, when I had met earlier this year with Putin. He said he wanted to see the Finlandization of NATO. He wanted those drawings everywhere. He said, I don't care if it's a sailor, policeman, strongman. You get me one type of guy who's no shorter than 6'2", no taller than 6'5". He's wearing one of those leather hats. It's like a train conductor hat, but it's made out of patent leather. It's so shiny you could floss your teeth into it. Not that you would. With all that's going on in respect to the world, but we're going to put Tom of Finland everywhere. He's going to be everywhere. And for once, we're going to have him draw someone who ain't white for a change. That's not how it ends, but he just keeps talking about in the actual transcript, he keeps talking about the Finlandization of NATO, and he doesn't explain what the fuck that means at all. It just ends.
Like, I really like this part of the interview because it's like this is very clear that like, they're like, okay, let's make a good case for Biden's leadership of the on the world stage. And this is a good example of how it is permanently 1963, right before Kennedy got shot in Joe Biden's brain, because like the actual quote is, he said he wanted to see the Finlandization of NATO. I told him he's not going to get the Finlandization, the NATOization of Finland. And everyone, no, he said, I told him he's going to get not the Finlandization, the NATOization of Finland. And everybody thought, including you guys, thought I was crazy. So he's saying,
yeah.
Putin wanted to see the Tom of Finlandization of NATO, but instead he got the NATOization of Tom of Finland, and everyone thought he was crazy for saying that, including you guys.
I'll never forget that week in 2022 when we were all like, there's no way that he's going to make NATO into Finland or vice versa. He's crazy. And then he did it. I have never wished more. I wish the animus from Assassin's Creed was real. I've never wanted to like go inside someone's mind so bad. It's what does he mean? What does this mean? I can usually figure it out, but like the Finlandization thing is insane. If this was 19, like not even the '80s, if this was 1995, this would be like disqualifying. Like that you would be out of politics if you gave this interview.
Yes.
I also don't know that much about Finland, except they have good schools and kids don't learn to read or go to school until they're 8. And there's a city called Espoo, which is funny to me. Other than that, and I feel like I know stuff about places, but I couldn't tell you, I couldn't even venture a guess about anything related to Finland.
Here's a fun Finn fact for you. Finnish is one of the only European language that is non-Indo-European in its roots. Like it's
Uralic, Finnish
and yes. The Basque language. Yeah, and the Basque language have no common antecedent. Like the people, linguists don't know where the fuck it came from. People, I think they're making it up.
Uralgia.
Yeah,
I like the Finnish. I mean, I don't agree with what they did in World War II. That they were not right to do that. But their general vibe, I like that they're like, hey, we're not going to do these wacky Nordic languages. We're going to throw some J's all over the place.
I don't know, man. Yeah. I got to say, Brazil needs to grow up. Speak Spanish. Grow up. That's ridiculous. None of us are going to take it seriously until you do that. I'm sorry. Shut up. By the way, I looked up Finlandization. The process whereby a country is induced to favor or refrain from opposing the interests of a more powerful country, so like every small country, despite not being politically allied to it, originally with reference to the influence of the former Soviet Union on its neighbor, Finland. So I guess the issue is that they didn't have a problem with the Soviet Union.
Well, they did during the Winter War. I guess he means that, like, NATO, like, they bought more jets, maybe? It's so hard to figure out.
I have no idea. But you're baffling. That's what you're saying about it. Like, he's permanently in, like, the very early Cold War.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not even like when his career like sort of like middle of his career in the late 80s when he gave us Clarence Thomas. It's like these are things that Dean Acheson talked about. It's so weird.
Yeah. No, but I just love it. Like this is his big like dunk. He's just like, I bet y'all thought NATO was going to get Finlandized, but in fact, it's Finland that got NATOized. And y'all thought I was crazy for saying that.
You thought I was talking about my man's Finland?
I wanted to use this interview as just like give like a brief tour through the world of atrocity. But as long as you're talking about the Russia-Ukraine war, I did want to highlight a tweet I saw this morning that's one of the most deranged things I've ever read. Maybe you've already seen me post about it this morning. But it comes courtesy of a guy named Nicholas Drummond, whose bio lists him as a defense industry analyst and consultant specializing in land warfare, former British Army infantry officer, UK advisor to KNDS. Views expressed are my own. Now, I guess maybe I should have read this first, but like, it will not shock you to find out that this guy is a self-proclaimed British infantry officer, because here's what he says. The average age of a Ukrainian soldier is 43 years old. Good. Old men can't run away quickly, so they stand their ground, fight to the death, and then make themselves a cup of coffee. To which I have to say, I know I am really getting old when I am of the average age of a Ukrainian soldier conscript into their army. And like, mm-hmm. I mean, and this does not augur well for the cause of Ukrainian nationalism, but like, I mean, think about how grim that is. Jesus Christ.
Your biggest strength is that you have bad knees.
Yeah, so I can't yeah. run, so I'll have to fight and die and then make coffee. I mean, like I said, not a surprise that this guy is a British infantry officer, because he just sees everyone on the planet as potential cannon fodder. And I guess just like, is LeBron's late in career success giving people an inaccurate idea of how good 43-year-olds are? I know they didn't make the playoffs. I know he's putting up good numbers, but this is like the opposite of the IDF with their like 18-year-old colonels. Now it's like the Ukrainians are fighting with 40-year-old guys. Is the average age?
It's really fucking depressing. I mean, yeah, Andalou, the Turkish news source, released a picture of guys who probably signed up to be like, you know, on home defense, or maybe were even like press ganged into this, like we've seen with some people. Guys on the front lines who at their youngest were in their 50s. And like, just the fact that like no one in the American security state even feels like a pang of guilt over this. Like, that there was a chance to negotiate and possibly end this, and they're like, nah, let's keep this rolling forever. When has the war ever gotten worse? I see nothing but good things in sight. And now it's this. Like, the thing that they keep pointing to, even though that like they're like just fucking dipping into their country's reserve of middle-aged men, is that we're training a bunch of Ukrainians how to pilot really old F-16s in Arizona, which I want to point out, the F-16 is like, the Russians have the most data on how to shoot that down with their air defenses, more than like any other plane in the modern U.S. arsenal. Even if we get all those Nordic countries to give them those planes, they like, there was a whole thing. We kicked Turkey out of the F-35 program because they bought F-16s and let Russia test their air defense systems on them. So like nothing is going to change. It's just going to be this horrible fucking grind of attrition. And no one, like, not Tony Blinken, not Biden, no one will really catch any shit from the American press for not like going to the table when they could have. When Ukraine was in a way more advantageous position and we could have avoided this.
Yeah, it's too late.
It sounds grim. It sounds grim. But you know what an advantage is to fighting with a Gen X army? You can't phase them, because they all grew up seeing the Challenger explosion on TV. and they also drank from the hose, and they stayed out. They stayed out and played all day in the streets. They rode their bicycles and skinned their knees. So I don't think they're likely to be phased by a column of Russian heavy armor.
It's not a good sign when someone is trying to justify the worst possible conditions for like a combat army by being like, yeah, but like Steve Albini, man, like it's just not a good idea. It's really bleak.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, I mean, to move on from one, like I said, just one intractable disaster to another. Felix, could we go back to the transcript real quick?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Time Magazine. So in Israel, obviously a difficult time there. What steps are you prepared to take against Israel now that Netanyahu appears to have crossed your red line in Rafah, Mr. President?
I'm not going to speak to that now, because you're just going to report this before I make before. I'm in the process of talking with the Israelis right now, so I'm not going to.
What does that mean?
If I tell you, you'll write it. It's not time for you to write it.
It's just...
He didn't
consent to give an interview.
At least he knows he's in an interview. That's good for him.
Inviting a reporter there and being
like, I know your game, Time Magazine. You can't get one over old Joe.
Inviting a reporter there. Oh, yeah. And what? Answer your questions so you can write them down.
Nice try.
Sure thing. He's amazing.
Now, as long as we're talking about the Biden's red line in Rafah, what are the nature of your conversations with the Israelis right now? Have you spoken with Bibi?
I've not spoken with Bibi since the attack Sunday. Was it Sunday?
This is at one point. Advisor Ben LeBolt says, yep, Sunday.
I have not. My team has.
Who's your team, though? You're not speaking directly with him? That is a bad sign. You're like, yeah, Mary in accounting is doing it. The guy who makes the coffee, someone in the mailroom. Like, you're
Ben LeBolt,
the guy who's supposed to be doing it.
Ben LeBall, LeVar Ball's worst son, is on the case.
But Time asked him, has he crossed your red line?
I'm not going to respond to that because I'm about to make a anyway.
I'm about to make an anyway. Sounds like he just shit his pants.
Yeah, it is. This is, if my 4-year-old niece responded to a question that way, we'd be like, we need to send her to stupid school. this is fucking crazy. How is this not disqualifying? This in 2002, this would be the end of your fucking career.
I'm about to make anyway, that's insane.
Okay. I'm about to make it.
Okay, well, when he says, I'm about to make anyway, and this is in the context of, has Israel crossed your red line in Rafah? Well, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news over this past weekend, but suffice to say, unspeakable atrocities are still occurring. But this time, there are news reports that they were occurring with the direct aid of U.S. Special Forces. So it's sort of like in this hostage rescue / massacre that happened over the weekend, not only is Biden letting Netanyahu cross his red line, he's crossing it himself. He's committing what our news accounts, like, I don't know, like, read for yourself. But like, apparently that they use the deconflicted zone in which they were reconstructing the remnants of his aid pier to land U.S. Special Forces troops, who then entered a refugee camp under the guise of a humanitarian aid truck. Think about that for a second. I mean, the old Trojan horse maneuver, which is not only cowardly, but I have to say, cannot be separated from what I think is a conscious effort to make the delivery of any aid into Gaza impossible. Because if every aid truck could just be potentially like 10 Chris Kyles waiting with itchy trigger fingers, then like the delivering aid of any kind is just literally just murderous. It's just impossible.
I mean, yeah, there's a good reason that is categorized as a war crime. Like, it is, it's hard to think of the U.S. stooping lower on that type of thing than when they ran sort of a bogus inoculation campaign to
track down Bin Laden. But
yeah, this is somehow fucking worse. Yet, just the bar can always go lower for the U.S. security states.
Back to the Time Magazine interview on this. It says, Time asks President Biden, more broadly, from the intelligence and the evidence you've seen, either currently or in the last months, have Israeli forces committed war crimes in Gaza?
The answer is it's uncertain and has been investigated by the Israelis themselves. The ICC is something that we don't recognize, but one thing is certain. People in Gaza, the Palestinians, have suffered greatly for lack of food, water, medicine, gummy bears, baseball games, ping pong.
The gum in baseball cards.
Gum in baseball cards. Nokia N-Gage. Hawker Phoenix from 1993. And a lot of it has to do with not just Israelis, but what Hamas is doing in Israel as we speak. Hamas is intimidating the population. I went over there right after that attack on the Israelis, what they did exceeded everything we've ever seen. And I've seen a lot. Tying mothers and daughters together with rope and pouring kerosene on it and burning them to death. That kind of thing, attempting to intimidate, and it is right. Dastardly.
It's saying dastardly, it's like they're tying mothers and daughters to train tracks and twirling their mustache. Yeah.
Like, it's like Biden loves these like completely debunked things that like even the Israelis admit are fake, but like using that language to describe it, like he goes to Auschwitz and he's like, this is so mischievous. This is
Hitler was such a rascal.
This is a testament to man's mischief to man. We believe there are those who are still alive. I met all the families, but we don't have final proof on who's alive and who's not alive. And by the way, I've been calling, we should have a ceasefire, period. And to get those hostages, that's the main reason why we push. Both the Israelis desperately want a ceasefire in order to get the hostages home, and it's a way to begin to break the momentum. And that's why we're pushed so hard. And is our intelligence chief in? Where is he now?
John Kirby interjects at this point and says, he is back, sir. He was just over in Europe, in Brussels, over the weekend. And then Time says, and whose fault is that the deal, the ceasefire for hostages, has not been consummated? Is it Hamas or Israel or both?
Hamas. Hamas could end this tomorrow. Hamas could say unintelligible and done, period. But the last offer Israel made was very generous in terms of who they'd be willing to release and what they'd give in return, etc.
They're going to send Brett Ratner back to America to face charges.
Can I ask something that might be a little naive? Why is John Kirby here in the room with him? Is that normal?
I mean, to have a handler?
I can answer this. John Kirby is Biden's comfort character. And he needs him to be around when he's feeling stressed out.
Yeah. He's his emotional support cabinet member.
I see it as like, it's like every bad grandson when they think that a grandparent only has 2 years left to live. And they're like, ooh, oh my God, I'm just going to live in their house and do their laundry for 2 years. And they're going to be so thankful that they like write me into the will. And that with John Kirby, it's like, he's going to make me president. And then it's Kirby time. And then I'll show them.
And then it's Kirby time.
It's like what
everything's so coming up, it's Kirby.
Like, it's like what Alex said, that the best moment in a Neat's life is when grandma slips and falls on the stairs. And
yes.
Then you can be like, don't have to be employed for the next 10 years. I'm on full-time grandma duty.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The neat thing where you're like, oh, yeah, I'd love to get a job, but I'm just taking care of grandma. And they're just eating all their food, sneaking up their house with fucking pre-rolls, not doing anything, probably accelerating their fucking death. That's what John Kirby's doing. John Kirby is taking all of Biden's dogs and blowing Delta 8 into their ears to get them high. The nurse who dressed my leg wound yesterday said that I'm actually really good at being the State Department spokesman, and I don't seem nervous at all.
Lingle Kirby.
I just, like, again, the part at the end of the one, two questions ago, where he's like, and that's why we're pushing hard for the, hey, where's our intelligence chief?
That's why he needed Kirby there, right? They're like, where is he?
Yeah.
Are you my son? Like, it's just very, no. It's a handler, right? Like, Biden can't use the stove or anything, like, at this point.
Yeah. This was like, I mean, remember, I think it was like, this was like sort of immediately after October 7th, but this was on one of Biden's trips to Israel. And he gave comments in Air Force One to the press. And there was that image of him speaking to the press looking desiccated. And like John Kirby, I'm sorry, Anthony Blinken was just over his shoulder, like in the airplane bathroom, just with a look of frozen horror on his face. And he was like right over his shoulder. And he knew that once Biden started talking, it would look bad for him to just interject and be like, you can't say that, or stop talking, Mr. President. But yeah, I think all of the sort of the grandpa minders around him live in a state of perpetual fear and anxiety. Like, for instance, that the I understand it's an executive job. There's a lot of people who work under you. And like, otherwise, I wouldn't think it's so damning. But it certainly does sound bad in the context of, like, is America a world power, that the president would be like, where's our chief of intelligence? Where is he? I lost him. What's he doing?
Yeah. I would do anything to, like, hear Blinken's internal monologue on that tarmac when he was just looking at Biden in pure horror. Oh, hoochie-coochie, man, don't like this.
Looks like another long day of picking cotton.
Yeah. Oh, we're gonna be breaking rocks in the yard all day. He thinks he's in the movie Life with Eddie Murphy.
Returning to the Time transcript, Time Magazine, you mentioned the hunger in Gaza. Some have alleged that Israel is intentionally using starvation of civilians as a method of warfare. Do you think that's the case?
No, I don't think that. I think they're engaged in activity that is inappropriate.
Once again, young man, inappropriate.
They're not starving millions of civilians. They're engaged in behavior that is simply inappropriate.
They're being naughty.
Both sides, the Israelis and the Rastafarians, have to pull their pants up. No one wants to see that. You know they do that to show others that they're gay in prison. That's why it was invented. I think it's, that is when I went over immediately after the Hamas brutal attack. I said then, and it became public, I said, don't make the same mistake we did after bin Laden. Don't try the idea of occupying Afghanistan. Good advice. I'm sure Israel was like, all right, we're going to invade Afghanistan right after October 7th. Wait, that's a bad idea? Okay, we're calling it off. The deal that you had nuclear arsenals in Iran that were being, in Iraq, that were being generated, simply not true. And it led to endless wars. They were not true. Don't make the mistakes we made. And they're making that mistake. I think, excuse my voice, I apologize.
Okay.
What? I apologize.
I'm trying to parse this.
I dearly apologize.
What the fuck?
He's saying in the context of an interview where just not even one paragraph earlier, he said he had seen videos of a mother and daughter being tied up and lit on fire. He's saying, don't make the mistake we did of believing a bunch of dumb shit and then occupying a country in an endless war that was a mistake. Sorry about my voice.
Yeah. I apologize.
This
is so fucking... everything is degenerated so fucking bad. This would end your career if you were, like, I don't know, a late night host in 1999. Like, you couldn't do... This is so fucked.
This would end your career if you were a boxer. The Nevada Gaming Commission wouldn't even sanction about if your pregame, if your pre-fight interview, you were talking like this. They wouldn't even hold this on a barge in international waters if you were giving answers like this to a medical, to a fight doctor.
Yeah, even Dana White would be like, all right, you can't fight. Like, this is fucking insane.
I know we glossed over it a little bit earlier, but in the question about is Israel committing war crimes, Joe Biden did say, we don't recognize the ICC, which is, that's pretty, I know he's saying I think he's trying to say we don't recognize their judgment in this case, but of course we still recognize them, you know, if it's a Serbian or an African war, but in this case, but for him to just say, we don't recognize the ICC, an institution that, like, we literally created to maintain, like, I mean,
yeah, like, I, God, this will be three elections in a row where both candidates are the only people that could lose to one another. Like, both candidates are the worst fucking candidates in history for evolving reasons. And then, like, I didn't think things could get worse than last time, but I didn't think things could get worse than 2016. This could be the worst election in American history. Like, how does anyone vote in this election? How do you not just kill yourself in the booth?
They should have another lever to pull for suicide booth.
Yeah. If more people commit suicide than vote, then we agree to, like, dissolve the country. Mm. Like, please, something like that. I will kill myself in the booth if it means that that's an option.
Throw my headphones up. I'm going dumb in the booth for this one. Okay, so it says here, this is after he says, don't make the mistakes we made. So Time Magazine says, do you have an agreement from all the other parties to this multi-part package of deals that would deliver that in Israel, in the region, other than Bibi? Is Bibi the only thing standing in the way of that?
I gotta be careful, because you're gonna print this before the article comes out, and I'm in the process of negotiating a lot of that.
That's not an answer.
You're gonna print this before the article comes out? What does that... Hey, everyone, I know that I did a whole interview with Biden, but we've decided to print it before the article comes out.
We need teasers.
I'm leaking.
You need a preview. You need teasers.
But the question essentially asks is, like, do you have a negotiating partner in the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu? And his answer to that is, I'm in the process of negotiating that. I mean, is he doing it too?
Yeah.
He's
doing a coup, but I have to be careful not to tell you that I'm doing it, because you're gonna print it before the article comes out.
You're gonna print it.
I know your fucking game.
All right. We're gonna the end of the highlighted bits that I chose from this, but it says here, the last 2 years of presidents, two-term president's tenure, are usually focused on foreign affairs. You are 81 years old and would be 86 by the time you left office. Large majorities of Americans, including in the Democratic Party, tell pollsters they think you are too old to lead. Could you really do this job as an 85-year-old man?
I could do it better than anybody you know. You're looking at me. I could take you too.
He literally says, I can take you to a Time Magazine journalist who's asking him if 85 is too old to be running the country. He says, I could do it better than anyone you know, and I could take you too right now. If you let's arm wrestle.
It's so Dan Quinn. I'm busy.
Wow. I really think that this journalist failed on a basic matter of journalism by not taking the president up on that offer. Like, the fact that the president challenges you to a fight in response to a question about his age, I feel like you have to be like, oh, all right, well, I guess we need to settle this once and for all. Are you old enough to fight a Time journalist?
Imagine that happened. Imagine you're like a sort of like millennial cusper journalist doing this article, and you're like, okay, fine, we'll fight. And you just deck him, and he falls in a really bad way, and you're like, oh, shit. And you somehow escape the White House. You somehow escape the White House. You escape the Marines. You escape the Secret Service. Your Uber's already waiting
for
you.
You're in the taxi with Maria Villalobos from Pulp Fiction asking you, what does it feel like to kill a man?
You're in the taxi. You get back to the hotel, and then you have, like, two missed calls from your editor. And you're like, oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. And you call them back, and you're like, no, it went great. Nothing happened. Nothing.
By the way, could you
happened.
Not print the article until it comes out?
Don't print this article before it comes out. That's the most important thing. We can't do that.
I think it's possible, though, that Biden would have, like, an advantage, because he'd want to fight in that, like, 1950s New York gangs way where they tie one arm by their wrist together, and then they have switchblades in the other arm.
Yeah, he would fight. He would fight and go down like Liam Neeson in Gangs of New York.
I'll take anybody, Jack, but no zip guns. Got to make that clear. But, like, does the Secret Service have a protocol in place where the president can order them to stand down like at the end of Lethal Weapon, where Gary Busey and Mel Gibson fight on Murtaugh's front yard, and then like he's surrounded by LAPD officers with guns, and Danny Glover's like, "No, this is between them. Let them finish it."
That would be like really cool, but the Secret Service is too lame to have like a protocol like that. That's something that would happen in the seminal Jet Li classic Hero, but not in America. I think 8 Botoxes ago, Putin may have like tried that move, but now ever since he got like his 8th facelift and like became a COVID
he's a long COVID sufferer.
COVID hawk. Yeah. Ever since he busted out that long table and he got long COVID, he's not doing that anymore. But I think if you're the president, they have to let you do that. Even if like Joe Biden would die instantly, even to the punch of a journalist.
I don't know. I feel like it's probably one of the rules where they have to break it up that was put into place during Joe Biden's administration. Just because they knew he was going to try to start fights. They're like, at some point, you know, Pappy's going to get scrappy. We gotta have like a contingency plan for when he does the finger gun thing from Gran Torino.
Well, listen, pussy, shut up. I'm president. Anyone you know? It's about the boat people, Jack. They're Hmong. I thought they were bad, but they're good neighbors.
What are you Jacks doing?
All right, getting to the end here. He says, Time Magazine says, do you consider not running again because of your age?
No, I didn't.
Sorry, and what do you say to Americans who are worried about it?
Watch me. Look, name me a president that's gotten as much done as I've gotten done in my first 3.5 years. When all you wrote in Time Magazine, I couldn't get any of it done. When you told me there's no pay, no way he can get $1 trillion+ done in terms of to deal with infrastructure, where there's no way he gets $268 billion for dealing with the environment, where there's no way I could get the legislation passed on. I remember when I was headed to Taiwan, to South Korea, to reclaim the chips industry that we had gotten $865 billion in private sector investments since I've been in. Name me a president who's done that.
He's bringing back the American chips industry. You know, Utz has been sold to a South Korean conglomerate, and they're bringing back the crab chips to the American.
I love it. Like the journalist was nice enough to just completely glide past the fact that Biden challenged him to a fist fight and was like, okay, let's talk about some of your accomplishments. Mm. But he's trying to throw Biden like a life raft, and Biden basically just takes out a .38 and shoots it. He's like, no, I'll drown. Let me tell you about when I went to the South Siam and I rescued all the ships.
Back when I was in Indochine.
Amber shared this in the chat. Felix, do you see this? It's a question about...
Okay.
All right, so it begins. Right. But Mr. President, won't your newly announced tariffs raise the price on American consumers?
No, because here's the deal. There's a difference. I made it clear to Putin from the very beginning that we're not engaging in, for example, Trump wants a 110% tariff on everything. That will raise the price of everything in America. Editor's note, Biden appeared to be Xi here, not Putin. What I'm talking about. Yeah, this is one of the most generous interviews I've ever seen.
This is a really nice guy.
Yeah, like, holy shit. I never want to see any of the Biden people say the media is out for them ever again after this.
Yeah.
They're
trying to be in the take for you, but you're literally too incompetent for that to be the case. They physically cannot be in the tank for you. It's too fucked up.
Editor's note, the president of the United States appeared to confuse Russia and China.
But after the editor's note, it continues. What I'm talking about, I said, we're going to play by the same rules. You tell me if I want to, if an American corporation wants to invest in China, it has to give 50% ownership, 51% ownership to a Chinese operator. And that goes from there. And I said, so you're going to do that to us? We're gonna do the same thing if you want to invest here. We're not going to put a tariff, not putting a tariff on. We're just saying, if you want to do that, well, we're going to do that. And you cannot change the market in a way where you flood the market by ignore all Chinese government subsidies to undercut their ability as to deal with electric vehicles. And we're not going to put up with it. That's the thing we talked about. And that's what we're here talking about. We're not talking about tariffs across the board. Slam dunk. Yes. Posterized.
Yes.
Backboard shattered.
Yes. There's a part where they say unintelligible in there. I feel bad. I feel like this is like, you know, this when we get the director's cut, that unintelligible will be a scene that we really wish was in the original.
Oh my! I interpreted it as him just like literally saying something on it, like just making sounds, but like director's cut, like seeing how in the tank the reporter is, it could have been something insane. You're right.
True. Like he might have taken it out like, just to save his ass. He's like, I didn't hear that. I didn't hear that.
Yeah. And we know that the Chinese they can turn into a tiger whenever they want.
The thing about the celestial races, Jack, is that they love gambling. They love the number 8. They can't get enough of it. Double happiness, Jack. They can't stop gambling on electric cars. We're not going to stand for it.
And I told Fu Manchu, you don't see me going over there, putting on your hat, spitting and gambling, smoking a cigarette made out of wet paper. Try to put me in the hat. I'll come around, turn that into a baseball cap. But you come over here, try to wear our hats. Well, I'll tell you what. Some of you jacks may have gone over the moon and turned into a jackrabbit. But when it comes turn for our year, that's when you know that I know. Where's my wife?
She's in Belgium, sir.
That's right.
Well, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I was. I think it gives you a good impression of the state of the Biden White House. But you know, I just like I said, I've got my little man was talking to me, and he's saying Biden wins re-election by losing the popular vote and winning the Electoral College. I know Ettinger Mentum has already put his chips down on that scenario being the most likely. So I'm riding with Josh. I just got a feeling.
I think so. I mean, you bring in, the thing is Trump is really bringing, like the batteries shark thing, sinking boat. Like
the shark batteries, yeah.
The shark batteries
was
thing
pretty
was
good.
That's
incredible.
A fucking banger. That's the hit of the summer.
I say, what would happen if the boat sank from its weight and you're in the boat and you have this tremendously powerful battery and the battery's now underwater? And there's a shark that's approximately 10 yards over there. By the way, a lot of shark attacks lately. Do you notice that? A lot of shark. So there's a shark 10 yards away from the boat, 10 yards or here. Do I get electrocuted if the boat is sinking, water goes over the battery, the boat is sinking? Do I stay on top of the boat and get electrocuted? Or do I jump over by the shark and not get electrocuted? Because I will tell you, he didn't know the answer. He said, you know, nobody's ever asked me that question. I said, I think it's a good question. I think there's a lot of electric current coming through that water. But you know what I'd do if there was a shark or you get electrocuted? I'll take electrocution every single time. I'm not getting near the shark.
I love that he's still going in on sharks. It's like his least favorite
sharks.
Thing.
He if he has ever
so
been
much.
In the ocean. This man has never been in the ocean.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, then now we know why. He doesn't want to risk it.
I love the first thing I ever saw him say about sharks, it was like before even the Obama birth certificate stuff, it was before he got into that. It was in like 2009. He was like, back when he was like pretending he like supported universal healthcare, he was like, sorry, folks, I'm just not a fan of sharks. Don't worry, don't worry about them. They'll be around long after we're gone, which I thought, what a it's great true. Line.
Yeah.
I really like it. Yeah.
They were here before, yeah. They'll be there after.
I wonder if there's like any evangelicals who like won't vote for him because he said that, because his shark cosmology runs in the face of Revelation.
Sharks have been here exactly as long as humanity has. Don't get it twisted.
And when Christ comes back, they're gone, just like we are.
Yep.
Sharks will not ascend. Sharks will not ascend in the fucking rapture.
I'm into like Unitarian cosmology where like, you know, there's like a pet heaven and there's like a, you know, like heaven is like a Montessori school, basically. Everyone can get in.
In his recent comments about would he choose to be electrocuted by the battery in a sinking yacht or be potentially killed by a shark? And he said, I'm going with electrocution every time, in one of his many digressions. And by the way, I don't think I'd like what makes those comments even funnier is that he was doing that. He was making those comments at a rally where it was probably 110 degrees outside. So I think like there was at least like 3 fatalities in the audience from heat stroke because he was in these endless digressions where he starts talking about sharks and he goes, and he's referring to they, like the shark scientists who want you to believe sharks are friendly. He goes, oh, like just the other week, you know, took a bite out of some young girl, but they say, oh, the sharks, they don't know what they're doing. they thought it was just food, but it wasn't for them. And then they go and they know what they're doing. Like he's bringing out like
people are fooled by big shark.
They're no angels. They're no angels, folks. You know, they sung in the church youth group, but they were out there biting people and were surfing one over again. They killed them.
To go back to like just, you know, general election prognostications, it is, I gun to my head, I have to say that, like, yeah, Biden winning the popular vote either very narrowly or not at all while edging out in the battleground states, that's like if I had to pick right now. But it should, like, the thing that makes this so hard, like I said, is that they are like, you could not design two worse candidates. This is like, this is the worst possible case for the Trump candidacy too, even with Biden being as incredibly fucking unpopular as he is, because like, again, you know, people, there are so many idiotic narratives about 2016 that people love, but the thing that no one wants to admit is that Trump won because independent voters saw him as more moderate than Hillary. That was the only reason he was able to edge out a victory. And that, like, who is going to think that anymore? You know, at least on the independent side. And not only that, he's a known quantity. And there have been 4 years of him talking exclusively about a loss, which is just like, that's poison. And that, you know, not even bringing up like the conviction, which I like, obviously for his base doesn't mean anything, but I think it moves a very non-insignificant block of independents. And with Biden, I don't like, Woodrow Wilson was more coherent than this at the end. Ronald Reagan was. I just like, I cannot. How does this happen? How the fuck does this happen? How?
It's what happens when too many Rubicons are crossed, okay?
Yeah.
These rivers are everywhere. We're crossing them willy-nilly, and now we're in the real terminal stages of empire, okay?
Yeah.
So if you see a Rubicon, just leave it alone.
They did a much better job of hiding it. Reagan. Like, Biden has more yard time. Like, I think, I don't know why they don't do, I mean, I know they have to trot him out every once in a while, and they do kind of, you know, they keep him, you know, a little close to the vest, but I don't know, he's a little too free range, but I don't know, I think you're probably right, Will.
It's like second term Reagan, the Republicans, they had a really strong defense, so all he had to do was just get in there, hand the ball off, maybe make a couple passes. But Biden, man, they're asking him to go out there and win the game. And it's looking rough right now. It's looking rough. But keep in mind, you know, keep in mind who they're playing against.
I don't see how anyone can be supremely confident in any type of Republican victory after, you know, the off-year elections, the midterms, everything that we've seen. They have underperformed to an insane degree, like a historic degree, against a party, you know, led by one of the most unpopular presidents we've ever seen in the modern era.
Mm.
But yeah, no, it's just, this is like, I don't know. Like, I don't even want to say it can't get worse than this because it always does.
Yeah.
I just, I want to see what fruit that will bear in the future. How can we go lower than this? Will it be, you know, fucking Ron DeSantis versus Gavin Newsom after they both experienced a plane crash that robbed them both of the ability to speak? Who knows? Great things lie ahead.
There's no rule that says a dog can't be president.
Yeah.
They're going to hear about it.
One thing is for sure, the future is so bright, we got to wear shades. But listeners, please, and I cannot stress this enough, do not listen to this episode until it is out. Please.
Yeah, no, yes. This is super fucking important. If you guys print this before the episode comes out, well, like, kiss democracy goodbye. We can take you.
We can take you.
Don't believe us. We just
will go.
Watch.
We will go all the way to Nippon. And we're going to put all the money on the chips.
All right, let's wrap it up there for today, folks. That was your Chapo Trap House for Monday, June 10th, 2024. All right, till the next time. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
I can tell you've cracked like a chime.